Would you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday, and it had you talking at the socialist union.
Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally, and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
That was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to Liberty NZ. My name's Grant Edwards, as you probably already know. And with me again today is Dennis Hall. Dennis is quite a well-known writer now in some of the circles, the Freedom Circles and the Liberty Circles. And he's also probably one of New Zealand's best sculptors. And I know he's very modest, but I think that would be true to say that. And also, he is a balloonist. And Dennis is in the Wellington area, and he's going to be talking to us today about the communist takeover, I think, isn't it, Dennis?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. That was what I thought we could ever go at if we've got 40 minutes to do that.
Yes, it'll be good. Well, the floor is yours.
Where can I start? Look, I know what I'll start with. I wrote this thing a few weeks ago, which got sort of published here and there, Breaking Views amongst other places, I think. And it was, I just decided that I needed to tell the truth as I saw it about Jacinda Ardern. And, you know, some of that comes out of that famous video that she did. And I started this thing off by saying, and I'll just read it off to you. You know, when you or your friends call Jacinda Ardern a communist and you just think it's no big deal, no more than an appellation someone has spoken to express an idea or maybe just annoy her, well, you need to think again and understand something. She's not angry or put out by that because she knows you are right. And it makes her smile because she also knows that although you say it, you don't really believe it. But she is a communist, and it becomes obvious to somebody who's a sensible observer. And if we go back to, if you don't mind me going back to that famous video of her at the world's, she was the president of the World Socialist Youth Convention or something, and they filmed her on the stage, talking to the crowd, rallying the crowd, you know, the whole big deal. And if, you know, it's all very well just looking at a video like that and seeing it in isolation, but you've got to think about where it actually came from. You know, you've got to think about the fact that she, you know, the speech she made, she would have written it. She would have studied it. She would, you know what I mean? She would have composed it fairly carefully because she was speaking to a like-minded audience. And she had gone there with that intention, really, because she had gone there as the president of that organization. So her entry into that was sometime previous to that, and I think it was 2017, wasn't it? It was just before she, sort of came to prominence in New Zealand. And
so she was 2009 that she gave that speech to World Youth, Communist Youth.
I still remember some stuff that I did in 2009. So I was going to say that she was probably sort of getting, you know, to have got to where she was in that organisation, she would have had to be working at it since probably around the turn of the century, you know, 2000. And so, you know, she's well imbued in it. She's part of that deal. She understands the culture of it. She was talking to them as a fellow comrade. She considered herself to be one of them, no question about that. And for her to sort of, when she's been questioned about that in recent times, she's just said, oh, well, I was young then. That's nonsense. You know, sure, she was young, but, you know, she was nonetheless she was an avowed communist. She wasn't just an ordinary common garden-of-the-mill sort of dreamer from Island Bay who thought he might be a communist someday. She was the real deal. And so she's our prime minister, and everything that she's done since she's been our prime minister has been moving New Zealand towards communism. And so if we, you know, a classic example of that tell me if you think I'm wrong, is the Three Waters thing and the Heipuapua thing. It is all about central control of all of our resources, and they're using the power base that they're using to actually do that, to move all of those assets, which are essential to the lives of every one of us, is to use the Indigenous people as the big excuse, and this whole business about that meeting about the Indigenous rights and whatever, blah blah blah. You know, all of those Indigenous people get all the same rights as the rest of us, but they've been given more, which is, of course, racism, no matter which way you look at it. But, you know, they feel very free.
It's apartheid, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is absolutely apartheid. And so for us, for New Zealanders, as a group of otherwise educated people, to not understand that giving a small group of people power over all of the rest is on the basis of race, on the basis of race as apartheid. But, you know, behind that sort of racial move to take over all that infrastructure, which is, as I said, vital to the well-being every day of every one of us. You know, they need an excuse, and they need a get-out clause. And a get-out clause is use the Indigenous people, and the protecting word for all of this, if you criticise us, we will call you a racist. And being called a racist is what all of our people are so afraid of, you know. The one thing, you know, you could call someone a Nazi anytime you like, they'll just shrug because no one takes that seriously. So we call them a racist, eh?
Mm. It's so ridiculous.
Mm. And so here's me calling Jacinda a communist, and, you know, and she'll just shrug. She will just shrug because she knows she is. She knows that people like me can say it, but she also knows that Mr. and Mrs. Average New Zealander will shrug and go, really?
Yeah,
and so,
that's right.
But I suppose the point I was trying to make out of all that is that business of her appearing in that video, which every single New Zealander should see, and it can be found just by putting Jacinda Ardern Socialist Convention straight into YouTube. You get it.
Mm.
And people need to watch it all the way through. And they need to watch her at the end of it rallying people. There's a couple of other things I've noticed about this that I want to mention. She's rallying people with Viva something or other, Viva something. Do you know what I mean? That kind of was almost like a South American dictatorship kind of thing going on. But also, you've got to have a look at the way she was dressed.
She was dressed in her underwear, wasn't she?
She was dressed in a very off-the-shoulder garment, which is sort of, look, I know women. I've had a lot of experience with women. I love women. I've spent a lot of my life chasing women, and I've known some wonderful women, right? And I know what Jacinda Ardern, I can sort of see it in the way that she dresses and presents herself. She is trying to, along with being a politician, she always, every day, works hard to have a sexual persona. She just does. And she's an attractive woman. But, you know, the other unusual thing about her, and you know, if she ever watches this, she can go back and look at some of the pictures.
I've got to haul you up on that. If she's an attractive woman, but you can see the beauty in any beast, can't you, Dennis?
No, you know, to say that she's not attractive is to say that she's, and it's all very well, you've got to separate. A whole lot of people would have thought Hitler was a reasonably handsome man, but you know we associate him with evil. Do you know what I mean? So that makes a difference. But for me, I do actually associate Jacinda Ardern with that duplicity. That sort of there's nothing real about her, I don't think.
And you get to an age where the beauty of the superficial, skin deep beauty of a woman doesn't have a hold over you anymore. And I don't look at that sort of exterior of a woman anymore. I'm more interested in, or of a person for that matter, I'm more interested in, you know, what's coming out of their mouth. I don't think I'm as attracted, or I don't think I'm as fooled by beauty as I was as a young man.
Oh, look, I don't think I'm fooled by it, but I'm very aware of it.
Yeah, I suppose you admire a beauty like a racehorse, isn't that a beautiful horse?
Well, yeah, but you see, look, I'm a sculptor, I'm an artist, you know. I look at faces in a slightly different way. And she does have, and when her face is in repose, it is quite a beautiful face. When
Put the makeup on.
she do, well, yeah, when she smiles, she has a blazing smile. There's no doubt about that. But you know, I've got photographs here that I've taken of her, and I've taken them off the TV screen. And all I've done, because I've got Sky, you know, must be one of the sort of elite if I've got Sky, but I can pull. I watch the news because I got to see what the bastards are doing, and so I calm the TV down and pause it and click 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 through that what she's saying, because what I'm able to see when I'm watching it is those horrible expressions that she does that turn up in between more benign expressions, you know, and they're there for sometimes less than a second. But sorry,
Like
Jacinda,
shape
I see.
shifting. She's like she's
Well,
shape shifting.
you know, I'll tell you what, I've captured sort of three photographs of her in one particular thing. It's a political, just an interview on TV. You know, and I did no manipulated photographs. I just used a
No.
camera. I just used my cell phone,
She's
photographing
quite
a bloody
rubbery in the
screen,
face.
and pausing it. And what she does with her lower face, I think, betrays the inner workings of Jacinda Ardern. And some of those faces are appalling, absolutely appalling. And you know, they and you know, one of the photographs that I took. I mean, it was me that took it. Sorry, Jacinda, it was me that took it. Was being paraded around in the Parliament grounds during that, and a big one. It was somebody had enlarged it, you know, down
Oh, did
there
you
at
take that
that protest. Yeah, absolutely. It was
photo?
my photo. Yeah, on my phone. I'm guilty, guilty. You know, there it is. And so, you know, I sort of see her in a, you know, see her as a woman on the one hand, but also as a sort of quite a very nasty politician on the other. And I know that, the thing about this is I know that one thing conceals the other, because for most people are very superficial about what they see when they look at the TV, especially when it's politics. When they look at the TV and they're looking at her speaking, you know, she can be quite benign, and it's easy for them to see that. And that's what got her elected. It's her looks that got her elected, no question.
Oh, no question. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think
no question.
people are attracted to young people. I think that's why a lot of the top real estate agents are young,
Yep.
because people are attracted to youth.
But she's also very articulate, you know, and I get all that. So there's a whole
Oh,
lot of.
come
Oh no, she
I
can I
wouldn't
say
say
that?
she's
She's not.
articulate. She's got, I don't know if I agree with that. I think she's got little phrases, little communist phrases that she repeats.
Oh yeah.
And I, but I don't think there's much to her depth wise, not much depth when you pick the surface off. And I think that's one of the reasons why she left Peter Williams and Mike Hosking and went to The Rock, where it's all superficial, it's all joking and, you know, kidding around sort of thing. I think that's why, because she was being asked some questions she didn't want to answer.
I'm not familiar with Peter Williams for some reason, but I'm very familiar with Mike Hosking because I listen to him most mornings. But I don't wake up early enough. I see an hour and a half. I listen to an hour and a half of him. We, you know, this country would be in deep trouble without people like Mike Hosking. Him and Heather Duplessy Allen, I just absolutely
Yeah, she's
applaud them.
good. Yeah,
Yeah,
I like her.
and
I
so,
don't listen to them much. I don't
you
listen to
know,
any mainstream media, but I know I should. We
but
talked about
Mr. and
these today. I'm
Mrs.
listening up today.
Mr. and Mrs. Ordinary Public, they know why that she, why she ran away from Mike Hosking's, because he has absolutely got her measure. He's unafraid of her.
He asks
He's
the
not,
questions that she doesn't want to answer.
he's not intimidated by her sexuality, her
No.
womanhood, or her political hood. You know, as far as he's concerned, she's dodgy. You know, he just approaches all of that
Yeah, I think you're
and
right.
it's straight in her face, and good on him. And so, Mike Hosking's, I'll you know, so, and I keep on going back in my head to that woman standing on the stage, arms in the air, going "Viva,
Yeah.
viva," whatever it was she was saying,
What
and
was the
she's
other
got.
word? Viva la some communism or something. What was
I
it?
don't know.
What's she saying?
I can't
Wouldn't
remember.
be Viva la France, would it? What does Viva
No.
mean?
Well, I think it was. I got a funny idea. Where would a socialist thing be held? It'd be held somewhere in the sort of, I don't know, Spanish oriented. I don't know, Cuba or somewhere. Cuba, that would be going viva in Cuba. And so I don't know. But so that was her association. So when people go and look at that clip, then and I should have done it, but I didn't do it. What we need to do is go and have a bit of a look and see where it was, why she was there, what the motivation was. Figure it out. Just if it was in Cuba, what was she doing in Cuba? Where were her political alignments then? They were quite clearly with communism. She's a communist all the way through. You've just gone dead.
Yeah, I'll play the entire clip at the end of this.
And I need to go back and have a look at it as well. But I think that if you and I, Grant, are going to do anything at all that might in some way educate and inform New Zealanders, because, I mean, we both take this sort of nonsense seriously, right? I mean, I look at politics every day and I give careful thought to what I see. And so if we're going to – and I think that I probably, because I've been sort of obsessed with this most of my adult life, and I've been writing about politics for so long, I'm an observer of politics, and I think I can reasonably sort of put up a reasonable argument for why Jacinda Ardern is a communist and why she is toxic and why the New Zealand public need to be made aware of just how dangerous she is and where she's going to take us and, where that Maori caucus is going to take us. Because if you think about it, the Maori caucus think they're getting their way, right? They think that they think, oh, we're winning here all the way. Hello, dog. Whoop! And they think they think they're winning. We're winning. But on the other hand, Jacinda thinks the communists are winning. Do you know what I mean? But one is using the other. They are using each other. And they both think they'll get an advantage out of it. And in the end, if the New Zealand public are properly informed, they won't. That's me. I'm puffed now.
Oh, okay. Is that the end of it?
Well, no, I don't know. It prompted me.
What happened?
I just think that I've sort of said, I mean, people get bored if I keep on talking about all of this.
Oh, we've got a bit of time up our sleeve. Oh, okay, well, now I've got to edit it. You've given me half an hour's work now fixing that.
Fixing it. Look, Grant, if we're going to do this, we're going to continue to do this, this has got to be real. Okay, we're two guys who've never met face to face, and we're sitting down and we're talking about we're two. What did I put on? I sent you a message today. I said it's two guys speaking their minds.
Did you? Oh yeah. Well, I suppose it is.
And we are. So if this is going to have a title, it should be.
Did you send me? Oh, you sent me a message on message. Did you? Because I've deleted all my Facebook. I've had a guts full of Facebook. I'm out of there.
Oh no.
I see. Yep. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, two geezers speaking their minds, because this is and what we're doing here is what this government wants to stop. They want to put brakes on people like you and I. They want they think that you and I are the toxic ones. But who else? What other government shut down all discussion? Nazism, communism. And the various versions, the Italian
fascism.
Version. Fascism.
That's
fascism, right.
Yeah.
And so would I compare just – I think there's a very close relationship between communism and fascism.
Yes.
The totalitarian relationship between them is complete. Complete. Yeah. And so I think that Jacinda Ardern and her government and the Maori caucus – because what do the Maoris want to do? They want to shut us down.
They do.
Absolutely. They make it plain. Every
they won't hear anything negative to their position. They won't hear it. So, they just call you racist. That's what they did to John Ansell at that hearing.
Well, you know, they've got that, you see, that racist accusation is a weapon. Mm. And yeah. But when we see racism coming the other way and try and respond by saying that's racism, everybody, I mean, a whole lot of the white folks that I know will shrug and go, really? People can be racist against us? And I say to them, for God's sake, what's wrong with you? You're a race. Of course
they can. I think we should just embrace it. Just say, all right, I'm a racist. You've called me a racist. All right, now let's deal with the issues at hand. You know, you've established that I'm a racist, so that's all right. Let's carry on.
Mm.
Now, what about answering the question?
What was the question?
Well, no, I mean, when you're talking to these people that call you racist,
I see.
Call you racist and just embrace it.
Yeah. You've gone silent again.
Yeah, I'm trying to quieten down the noise in here. I should have done it upstairs.
All right. Oh, but
it's like the newsroom in here.
It's a very calming background, you know.
But yeah, you see,
it just seems like, you know, busy household, you know. All right.
Oh, yeah. Busy. Everyone's busy except for me with my war injury.
Oh, okay.
I rang the doctor today to see how long it would be before they could get me into the hospital. You think after 2 days you would have heard back and you told them you're in pain.
Well, they say take a Panadol.
Oh, yeah. I got all that stuff. They gave me Tramadol, which I would only take if I had a broken leg or an amputated leg. But I've got it because you never know when you might need it out on the farm. You might need it for something really serious. I can bear this pain, but always grab as many free pharmaceutical painkillers as you can, I say.
Well, have you taken Tramadol before?
Tramadol? Yeah. Yes. Slow releasing. I took it when I broke my ankle.
You know, you need to take a laxative at the same time, eh?
I took a Panadol and a Tramadol at the same time. That's quite pleasant.
But look, you know, one of these days I'll talk to you about some of the surgery that I've had. But let
talk
me tell
to
you
about how to take drugs properly.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you just got to be careful of Tramadol, and you've got to be careful of morphine, and you've got to be careful of because what they do is they bind you up, something shocking, you know.
Yeah, they do. You always wash it down with a Pinot Noir or a Pinot Gris or something like that to wash it down with.
No. Laxative. You've got to take a laxative. Absolutely.
To wash down the
Tramadol. It's either that or go to the toilet with a crowbar.
Oh, no. Nasty. that's morphine will bind you up. Little black balls, isn't it?
Oh, tell me about it. I've got morphine. They give me morphine because I'm this old geezer. And they just give me a bottle of it every time
it's
I go.
It's like they're saying, oh, here's a gun. Just pull the trigger anytime you like, isn't it, with all the stuff they give us.
So I say to him, you know, Jesus, that locks you up. And he says, well, yeah, I know. Didn't I tell you to use the laxative at the same time?
Oh, all right. Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, the troubles of old men. Anyway, that was good. What's that?
There's a topic for discussion. The problems of old men. The problems of being an old man. I mean, they go all the way from... They go,
no, I'm not interested in that. No one's going to be interested. We've got 10 minutes. No one's going to be interested in that. What did you want to talk about yesterday? Death. Oh, no, I can't even imagine being dead. Can you?
Well, there's nothing to imagine when you're dead.
I can't imagine not being alive.
Oh, yeah, I can. Yeah.
Oh, no, I can't.
I can just imagine people standing around looking at a hole in the ground and saying, God, Lord, there's Dennis. He's in a box. But that's not going to happen to me because, you know, I'm going to get cremated.
Mm.
And then, you know, I can be dust again. Because, you know, they say ashes
to ashes. Dust to dust, yeah.
And so, whatever. Well, but, you know, good Lord, you just disappeared.
I've got a dodgy plug here.
All right.
I'll just plug it in again.
The dodgy little guy on the screen.
Dodgy plug. I've got something wrong with this plug.
Yeah, well.
Oh, caught me. Oh, I love it. Hey, I watched some old Norman Gunston last night. Do you remember his name's Gary McDonald, Australian actor and comedian. And back in the 80s, he used to do these interviews. Remember? And he had cut face, little bits on here. And he'd interview people like, you know, Mick Jagger and, you know, and all these Americans. And Americans didn't know how to handle him. He actually went to Hollywood and interviewed people, and they just had no idea how to handle him at all. They just couldn't cope with his sense of humor. It was just ridiculous looking at them. But Norman was great.
He was. I remember him. Did you find him on YouTube?
Yeah, Norman Gunston. Yeah.
I remember that. I remember we stood sitting around smoking dope and listening to him, amongst other things, and a bit of Pink Floyd and whatever.
Smoking dope.
Back in the olden days.
He was very funny. And then he sort of disappeared off the international stage, didn't he? But he's still acting in Australia.
Oh, okay, yeah. Mm. It'd be hard to make somebody like him go away.
74 now.
How many?
74. Born in 1948.
How old
so
are you,
you must have been born in 1940, were you, or late 30s?
1941. Do you know what happened the day? Look, do you know what happened on the day that I was born, on the actual day that I was born?
Don't tell me. The angels got together.
No. Hitler got so angry with Russia that he invaded Russia on my...
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, 1941. That was a really stupid move, don't you think, for him to do that, to have two fronts?
And I think it was my fault.
Because you were born.
Because my mother was busy there squeezing me out, and there was a lot of trouble and screwing. I was struggling and she was struggling. And the mood transferred itself to Hitler, and he went, we've got to go and kill those Russians. So off he went on my birthday.
Well, NATO are doing a good job of that now, aren't they? NATO have taken over Hitler's job of getting rid of the Russians. I can't believe, with Russia, I can't believe all the Russophobia that's been going on for years and yet decades. And now, and I just can't, I cannot believe it. It was basically media-driven. Everyone was pro this crazy Zelensky in Ukraine. It's just nuts. And people are siding, and they have no idea of the history of Ukraine and Russia and the relationship they have. And I quite like the Aussie Cossack. He puts it this way. He says that, you know, the relationship that Russia and Ukraine have is a bit like me and my wife. We have an argument. The argument will be finished by tonight. It'll be all over and done with. But if the neighbors and your friends start getting involved, then that makes it all worse, and everyone's fighting each other, and you shouldn't interfere in marital relationships. And he puts it down. He says that Russia and Ukraine is just like a marital tiff. But really, I don't agree with that. I think it's NATO and America it's a proxy war against Russia. They want to bring him down because he doesn't want to be part of their globalist agenda. That's how I see it. I think that's it. Even though he went to the World Economic Forum and he's supposed to be one of the young leaders that Schwab, what's his name? Klaus Schwab goes on about and shows off about. But I actually think he was just there to see, look and see. Just a bit of investigation, because he was a spy after all, wasn't he? Spy boss. So no. I don't think he wants to have a part of the globalist agenda. You know, the new world order that they're speaking about.
Does that mean you trust Putin?
I think I trust Putin more than America now. I never used to, but I see now what I've seen happen in the Middle East with the way they've just invaded countries. I see that as wrong, morally wrong.
The bad
guys now. They're the baddies.
No, Fred, I don't see it like that at all.
You don't see it that way, and I never used to, but I do now. I think that Putin is a good guy, and I think that the Syrian leader too, Assad, I think he's a good guy. And I don't know about Iran. Because I don't know, but I would imagine that they're probably good guys as well, and we are the baddies.
Yeah, the Iranians are good guys. They just persecute their women. That's all.
Well, I mean, the thing is, that's what we hear in our media, but is it true? Because the stuff they said about, the things they said about Libyan leader Colonel Gaddafi, a lot of that wasn't true. And I've seen quite an interesting, in-depth documentary on him and how good he was to his people. And he could just drive through the streets in an open car, just waving at the people and, you know, thousands of people all around, and he was safe. And he knew he was safe because they loved him, because he was good to them. And Hillary Clinton had him killed.
Look, I think that the thing about Gaddafi is that, I mean, they're Islamic states. You're talking about Islamic states. Mm. I mean, you know, Islamic states or states with a religious component have got to be regarded with a great deal of care anyway, and because, you know, their judgment is made from
any Spain. Ideology you've got to be careful of, like Russia, socialism, communism, fascism, they're all dangerous. So socialism has killed more people than religion.
But socialism doesn't sort of walk into the midst of other countries and kill innocent people in the
That's what America's doing. America is going into the midst of other countries and having just giving themselves the moral high ground to go in and kill. They killed thousands and tens of thousands of people that didn't need to be invaded. Well, in Afghanistan, there was no weapons of mass destruction. No, Osama bin Laden wasn't there. And then they went into Iraq. What did they go into Iraq for? You know, and why did they kill Gaddafi?
Iraq was Saddam Hussein. My memory is, I watched all that at the time. I thought that that Saddam Hussein was a pretty dodgy sort of character. I thought that
that's what our media says, you know. But I wonder now. I've wondered for a long time. Was he really as bad as what they said he was, or was it that they just couldn't control him anymore? So he wouldn't do what he was told, so they took him out.
Yeah, well, there'd be a component of that as well, but at the same time, I don't think he was. I don't think he was a dainty sort of character at all, at any level. I mean, Saddam Hussein was guilty of killing a lot of his own people.
Yeah, but America is. America and the UK, they are too. We're not innocent. We are killers, and I'm. It's disgraceful. I'm ashamed to be on the West. We're the baddies. And if war broke out and I was of war age, I would be a conscientious objector. I would not fight for these people that are running our world at the moment.
Look, Grant, you know, you're absolutely entitled to your opinion, and I would not I wouldn't hold any of that against you, but I disagree.
I didn't get there just like yesterday. It took me a while to get there.
Yeah, no, but we all reach our own conclusions about what's going on. But yeah. I think that, look, you know, to me it all comes back to civilization, right? The civilization that we exist in today, which involves cars, TVs, cell phones, and living in houses, was not developed in Iraq, and it was not developed in Libya or any of those places. It was developed in Europe and the United States of America. And so that big society, that big civilization has migrated to the rest of the world, and so the rest of the world deal with it as and when they might.
I cannot say anything until I first say a word of thanks to the Prime Minister of Hungary for being with us here today, to our comrade party leader, and to our hosts, our organisers, our comrades, Societas. Give it up again for Societas! Comrades, I must also thank your political leaders for this UC Festival 2009. Not only the Secretariat, who have done a fantastic job, but our UC Presidium, who stand behind me and who have led the political program and assisted with the organisation of this festival, and also to the UC Secretary General, Johan Hassel. Please, one more time, give it up for them. Comrades, as we leave this festival, I'm reminded of three very important things. The first is just how different we are. Some of you like the most terrible music I have ever heard. But when we leave this place, it will not be our differences that we remember, but it will be the things that we share in common. And no matter where in the world you come from, no matter how small your organization or your country or your movement may be, remember that you have comrades around the world fighting for the same principles, fighting for the same things. You have solidarity. Comrades, the second thing... The second thing that I'm reminded of is more somber, and that is that as a movement, we have not won. And I don't just mean against the neoliberal agenda that we are all fighting. I mean that within our own organisations, we are still fighting for our principles there too. And as long as we're in a place where we come to a UC festival and our women are harassed, we have not won. And as long as we come together as comrades and still see amongst ourselves our LGBT rights and our LGBT comrades are not respected by each and every one of us, then we have not won. But the third thing, comrades, and this is the message I also want us all to take away, the third thing is that we are a strong, bold and courageous movement. We have come together here at this festival and discussed the principles which we all hold true. Social justice, equality, peace, and everything else that we have continued to strive for in our countries, but the time has now come to move beyond rhetoric. That takes courage. And UC has always demonstrated that courage. It was UC who said, why is Western Sahara, after all this time, all this injustice, why are they not free? Comrades, it was UC who went to the Socialist International and said to our mother parties, it is time the Polisario was recognised by our own family. UC did that. That was you. Comrades, we have shown courage on the issues that matter. It was UC who brought up climate change amongst our mother parties when they did not touch that issue and our planet was at stake. It was UC who said to our mother parties that we must change our position on migration, that our rhetoric did not meet our reality and we must continue to send that message. It was UC who said that we contradict ourselves when we say that we are peaceful nations and yet we continue to proliferate nuclear arms and we continue to trade small arms and we continue to sell arms in Colombia, in Africa, in the countries that require our solidarity, in the countries that cry out for peace. And it is UC who says, not one more dollar, not one more dollar on war, not one more dollar on nuclear weapons, not one more dollar on small arms. But here, at this festival, it was UC who said that in an international environment where everyone is discussing the economic crisis, we called it what it was, a neoliberal crisis. And it was UC who said that despite that crisis, we must focus on the struggle that really matters, and that is the struggle against poverty. So, comrades, as we leave this place, I remind you all of the responsibility you now have. You have the responsibility to continue on to make UC the courageous movement it is. It is you who must challenge your mother parties. It is you who must challenge your opponents. It is you who must challenge one another. Comrades, then and only then will we win the war. Will we win the war on poverty? Muchas gracias. Viva UC, viva! Viva UC, viva! Comrades, I want to invite the heads of delegation to join us on the stage for the Internationale and to say goodbye and to conclude the UC Festival 2009.